Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research and unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community. As Drs. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health on 97.9 The Hill and on demand at chapelboro.com.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine, Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein. I'd like to welcome our guest co-host today, Dr. Samir Arora from the University of North Carolina. Welcome, Samir. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
We are going to have a great show today, I hope. And we're going to be talking with Lori Alhadeff, whose daughter Alyssa was tragically a victim of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, about her family story and how they're advocating for ways to make our schools safe. I think it's a critical issue, and I don't know of anyone better that could talk to it.
I completely agree. I think that's a great topic, very important.
Yeah. First, though, we're going to actually talk about some important research that matters. And the very first one is maybe a surprise to our listeners. It was a surprise to me, and it's about the poisonings and the injuries that occur to children every year from swallowing things like toiletries or makeup or nail polish remover, things that are in the bathrooms of every day that perhaps we don't think about, including lotions.
Yes, the researchers pointed that over a 15-year period, nearly 65,000 youngsters under 5 years of age were treated in the U.S. EDs for injuries related to personal care products.
Yeah, the emergency departments, a dozen kids a day. And again, these could be moisturizers, it could be perfumes, hair relaxers, and perm shampoos. And even if they're up high, these kids crawl up frequently and get them, and they can be really dangerous. So, the bottle of perfume, these fragrances can be mixed with 100% alcohol, and the nail polishes can have chemicals in them, and the hair relaxers and perms can have chemicals in them that are really, really dangerous.
Yes, they can be really dangerous, but fortunately, as Dr. Jeffrey Fine, who's a pediatric toxicologist at NYU, pointed out, that they don't really cause serious injuries, most of these intoxications, but some of them can definitely be extremely dangerous.
Well, I think that the fact that kids are showing up every day in emergency departments and the fact that the injuries haven't gone down over time lets me know that we need to do better. 28% of the injuries were nail polish remover. If you got nail polish remover and you've got a child in the house under the age of 2 or really under the age of 5, you got to make sure it's secured. If you got hair care products, skin care products, those three things alone cause almost 80% of these, what I say are preventable injuries. I'm going to say one thing that I think all our listeners should do. If you have any children in the house, probably anyone, including adults, put the poison control number down, 1-800-222-1222. That's 800-222-1222. Put it in your cell phone. Put it on the refrigerator. We're going to have our health sciences librarians put it up on our website. It's something that, if it occurs, you at least can get expert advice quickly. Our next research that matter actually was published in Plus One, and it's about our social networks. And we've talked on the show before, Samir, about how social networks we know in bad health are really, important. So if people smoke, they tend to smoke with friends. And we have begun to understand that these networks are important in how we think about it. It's not just the individual. This looks at it on the other side, which is, can they be predictive of good health? I found this really interesting.
Intriguing indeed. As the investigators pointed out, they were interested in the topology of social network.
What's that mean?
What does my position within my social network predict about my health and well-being?
And they basically showed that there was a strong correlation between these structures in social network and heart rate and physical activity. And, the stronger this social network, the stronger this group that was influencing one, these were actually much more predictive than just like your own use of, let's say, a Fitbit alone. It's how these social networks are happening, and that these social networks actually can predict not just your health, but maybe how you feel about being positive or in success outside of health. These are really important, and I just think that it gets me as a provider thinking about when I'm having a conversation, I should probably understand a little bit more about who influences and helps you influence and who do you influence and care about, and how do we maybe take that into account when we're thinking about interventions that are sometimes complex.
Yes, that's completely right. And as the investigators pointed out, unless we have a complete idea of somebody's social network, we don't really know what exactly is going on with this overall health.
Speaking of networks, this next research that matters has something that's kind of depressing. It's the network of the tanning industry that's promoting tanning. And we know that there's a lot of research about tanning booths and the dangers. And so we're really not talking about the dangers, but we're talking about the things that these tanning facilities do to try to recruit, in many cases, younger teens, adolescents, like unlimited tanning packages, discounts, and even free tanning when, for instance, teens are looking for gym membership.
Yes, this is an interesting study, how the tanning industry is luring youngsters. There's just some intriguing facts in this study.
And it's not really just adolescents. It's really young adults, because it could be like apartment rentals. We know that there are many states that limit, and you know, children under 18 from tanning, but there's a lot less that's being done that looks at advertising, promotions, or pricing. And we know that if we could reduce tanning, we would actually just save lives from melanoma. That's that simple.
That's one of the findings from the study, yes.
Yeah. Well, our next research that matters is something that I'm sure you've seen a lot of in your training. I've seen of way too much, which is obstructive sleep apnea. And I guess what's been difficult to define is how many people in the United States or worldwide may have it, though I think that given the rates of obesity and the relationship between obesity and obstructive sleep apnea, it's not surprising that this is one of the largest problems in the world today.
Yes, and as the study pointed out, obstructive sleep apnea may affect as many as 37% of the adults in North, Central, and South America.
This just tells us that as we work on reducing obstructive sleep apnea, we are also working simultaneously on reducing obesity. And when we help out one, we'll help out the other. In the meantime, though, getting diagnosed with this obstructive sleep apnea and getting some treatments, even though they can be expensive and require some visits, can be life-saving. We highly encourage them.
Yes, and I think the flaw here is at the level of diagnoses. I think that's where we need to do better. I think these patients just not been getting diagnosed as the way they need to be.
We need less expensive and easier ways of doing it, and I hope that that's coming. That'll conclude the Research That Matters portion of our show. We'll take a short break, and when we return, we'll hear a recent interview that we had with Lori Ahladef, whose daughter Alyssa was tragically a victim of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, about Lori and her family's story and how they're advocating for ways to make our schools safe. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Samira Arora. We'll be right back.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein. Today on Conversations, we're talking with Lori Ahladef, whose daughter Alyssa was tragically a victim of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, about her family's story and how they're advocating for ways to make our schools safer. Welcome to Your Health, Lori.
Hi, Adam.
You know, I so appreciate your willingness to come on and share your story and the work you and your family is doing. And I must say, when I first heard and I heard was able to hear you speak at a community event, I really marveled on what you've been able to do. And I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you really become engaged in something that, you know, 2 years ago was not on your horizon, and how you had the courage to really become engaged?
So after the tragedy, my head was just spinning and just trying to figure out, to try to make sense of the tragedy and what happened to my daughter on February 14th. And I came up with this idea of starting a nonprofit organization called Make Our School Safe. And our mission is to make schools safe for all kids in all schools. And I wanted to make a change for our schools because our students are required to go to school. So I feel that as adults, we are required to make sure that our schools are not soft targets and that they go to school in a safe environment and that they come home alive. So that became my focus after the tragedy. And then also I decided to run for school board and I won. So now I'm making a direct effect on 275,000 students of Broward County Public Schools, which is the sixth largest school district in the country.
Wow, that's amazing. And as they would say, Cole Caveau, well done for taking that leadership in a difficult time.
Yeah, you know, after when I was sitting Shiva for Alyssa for 70, people would come up to me and they're like, we need change. And I was like, great. And they're like, yeah, but I can't do it. And it became very apparent to me that in order for change to happen, that I need to have a seat at the table, that I need to be the voice for that change. And to get the job done, I need to be that one.
When we talk about school shootings, and we know Parkland was so atrocious, as are so many school shootings. I was just looking at some recent data in 2019 alone that there have been 13 school shootings with injuries or death and 22 people killed. Does this seem different than perhaps when you or I was growing up? Because I certainly don't remember violence. I remember perhaps bullying, but I don't remember violence.
I agree with you. I think that our country has changed. Our kids have changed. I think the video games and the violence are happening more often with our children. I think they're becoming antisocial with all the social media, and I think it's affecting their mental health. And these kids that are the school shooters, they are telling people and reaching out for help, but unfortunately in our tragedy on February 14th, nobody listened. The FBI failed us. The school district failed us. BSO failed us. And we have to take these threats seriously. When kids see something and they say something, then we must act and do something about it and make sure that these kids are getting the mental health needs that they desperately need.
You've experienced something that really no one other than someone who perhaps has lost a child in a school shooting could really understand fully. Can you help our listeners understand kind of when you knew that it wasn't enough for you to respond but act and to try to do something and see something done differently?
You know, Adam, I feel like I use my grief as my advocacy to be able to make change. I use my anger and try to channel it in a path where I can be a voice for that change. Because at the end of the day, if I don't speak up, and if I just say laid in bed and did nothing, who's going to be a voice for these kids? Who's going to be an advocate? Who's going to make that change? So I wake up every day and I try to do the best I can and make change. And that's all I can do.
You know, I reminded by a saying that says, if I am not for myself, then who will be for me? And I think you take that really forward. But speaking out on behalf of the other children and parents who need help, how did you begin to decide with Make Our School Safe that there was a very focused area that you could make a difference?
So school safety is something that we can all agree on, whether Republican or Democrat. We all can agree that we want to send our kids to school in a safe environment. Make Our School Safe does not focus at all on the gun issue because it becomes too polarizing. People go to the right, people go to the left, and then they forget about making schools safe. So I want to make a direct impact and change in school, and that's why Make Our School Safe focuses specifically and strictly on school safety and not the gun issue. I know people are fighting that fight, and I applaud them, but that's not my focus.
So take us to a time in any school where a difference can be made in safety in the school. What's happening that a safety difference, a safety change could definitely impact?
So what we need to do is create layers and layers of protection, from single point entry with fencing to bulletproof glass in the school doors and the classroom doors to the classroom to RFID technology on the students' ID badges, from other layers of protection from the students having bulletproof backpacks, because at the end of the day, if all else fails, they would have that bag to protect themselves. We need to create safer spaces in the classroom and put a stop the bleed kit, which would have a tourniquet in there, in the safer space. Hypothetically, if a student was shot, the teacher or student could put a tourniquet on a student's arm and hypothetically could have saved their life. And so within these layers of protection, from apps like reporting apps for students or parents, teachers to report tips, being proactive to, you know, it's going to save lives from suicide through school shootings. The other big, huge piece of this, a part of making schools safer, is the mental health aspect of it. We need to start implementing more mental health strategies within our schools, especially starting at the elementary school level. And we need to provide more money from federal dollars, state dollars, into our public schools to be able to put more social workers, psychologists in our schools to help our students. They are crying out for help and they need help.
You know, these are such practical solutions that seem like, why haven't we done them already? We're going to need to take a short break. When we return, we're going to continue talking with Lori Alhadeff, whose daughter Alyssa was tragically a victim of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, about her family's story and how they're advocating for ways to make our schools safe for everyone. We'll be right back with Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein. Stay with us.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health, and we've been talking with Lori Alhadeff, whose daughter Alyssa was tragically a victim of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, about her family's story and how they're advocating for ways to make our schools safer for everyone. And right before the break, Laura, you were really talking about some of the practical short-term needs and ways that schools can make children safer. And I know you've were really active in New Jersey in getting a law passed called Alyssa's Law. Tell us how that came about, because it's a remarkable story.
After the tragedy, someone from my town in Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey, contacted me and told me about this law that we could hypothetically get passed in New Jersey, which would require every school to have panic buttons. And these panic buttons could be something that the teacher wears around their neck, where they could push a button or an app on their phone or something on the wall, like a fire alarm. And what's amazing about these panic buttons is that once they are pushed or activated, it's a direct line of communication to law enforcement to get them on the scene as quickly as possible to take down the threat. So a few months ago, I was able to help get the Alyssa law passed in New Jersey. Governor Murphy signed it into law. And coming next school year in September, every school by law will be required to have these panic buttons in their school.
Wow. Are other states looking to do Alyssa's law? Because it seems common sense.
Yes. So I'm working with legislators here in Florida to get the Alyssa law passed next legislative session. And then also New York is pushing hard to get the Alyssa law passed. You know, I would honestly, Adam, I'd love to see this be a federal law because every state needs to have these panic buttons. You know, after every massive school shooting, the president sends his thoughts and prayers. But we need action. We need these panic buttons, things that will make the school safer by, you know, the shootings are over in 5 minutes or less. So we need to get law enforcement as quickly as possible to get in the schools to take down the threat. And we need the EMS to be coming in as fast as possible to triage the victims. February 14th, I was texting with Alyssa, and I told her to run and hide, that help was on the way. Unfortunately, she did not text me back, and Alyssa was in the first classroom, and the shooter shot directly at her, shooting her 10 times, and unfortunately killed her.
Mm. And we know time can make a difference. I know in some places where they're unfortunately used to this, maybe even more than the U.S., they have invested so that no one's far away from an EMS, and we empower teachers to be able to have that type of training. Is this part of what your vision is that we have a system? We may not be able to prevent every act, but we can certainly mitigate the damage as much as we can.
Absolutely. It's from putting in proactive measures and then also reactive measures. And that's why when I talk about layers and layers of protection, that's what's creating the safety in all the schools.
And was there any opposition to this law? Was there anything controversial, like how do we pay for it or anything? Because I could just see, like, this is common sense.
Right. You know, of course, it always comes down to money, but they passed a special referendum to get the dollars to pay for this. But you know what? We make sure that we protect our banks. We make sure that we protect our courthouses and government offices. So why not protect our children, our diamonds, our precious, you know, babies?
Yeah, that really is applaudable, and I hope it feels good to those types of differences. You mentioned that you were also just elected to the board. Tell us about that. What is your goal? What do you hope to achieve?
So my main focus is making sure that our schools are safe. And after February 14th, we had a school safety risk assessment report done on all of our schools. So now as a school board member, it's a top priority of mine that those recommendations are implemented in all of our schools. And, you know, after every school shooting, they come out with these reports and the commission reports and all these recommendations. And I feel like, unfortunately, you know, they kind of pick and choose different recommendations to implement. But I want to see all the recommendations implemented. And, you know, sometimes if the recommendations are not even financial, it's just changing of policies and procedures. So as a school board member, it's my top priority to make sure that the schools are safe.
What's one example of something that you think should be done immediately?
Immediately should be to, one, lock all the doors to the schools from the outside, and then also lock all the classroom doors. It really upsets me when parents tell me that their door to their school is unlocked. That's just unacceptable. Every door has a lock, pretty much, so why are we not locking them?
Right. Our building where I work, there's one way coming in and there's one way going out, and we have people always there. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You've also been involved in these Dream Team clubs. What are those, and how are those making a difference?
So part of my nonprofit organization, Make Our Schools Safe, is where we have students be the voice for change and safety at their school. So students are starting what's called Dream Team Clubs, and they are the voice and advocate, making sure that safety is the top priority of their schools and bringing certain safety initiatives to their principals to basically create a culture of safety within the school. And you can check out our website, makeourschoolsafe.org. And if you're interested in starting a Dream Team Club in your school, no matter where you are around the country, you can send us an email at info@makeourschoolsafe.org.
And we're definitely going to put up a link on our website to your foundation, to the Dream Team Clubs, to Alyssa's Law, maybe ways of this risk assessment in the schools. I think people would be really interested in applying that locally and thinking globally. You mentioned earlier that one of the challenges is mental health. And we know that this is such a big issue. And again, why we don't have social workers at all schools and mental health nurses at all schools. What do we need to do to not only help those that are struggling, but also help those who are survivors, parents and children who've witnessed violence and been part of it?
So I think the first thing that we need to do, Adam, is to stop the stigmatism of mental health. That stigmatism is preventing people from getting help. And we need people to know that it's okay to talk to somebody about your problems. It's okay to seek help. You know, we see someone maybe with a broken arm and they're wearing a cast, but from their shoulders up, we can't see what's going inside their head. We can't see what they're thinking and what those problems are. So we need to create a culture within our society that it's okay to seek help. You know, after the tragedy, I've seen a mental health therapist every week to talk about the shooting of my daughter Alyssa and talk about things. And this is what has helped me in trying to deal with my grief and the loss of my daughter.
Well, and we also know that you've become a very public, outspoken advocate for improving things, but that also means sharing things that perhaps you wouldn't ordinarily share. And, you know, first off, thank you for that. Thank you for that courage, but also thanking you for allowing us to join that conversation, which I think is a really just a lasting tribute to Alyssa and to your family.
Thank you. One of the things, unfortunately, that we've seen here in Parkland is we've had two suicides. And so I think that nobody wants to talk about suicide, but it's a huge problem within our society. And we have to be able to ask the tough questions. You know, are you thinking about killing yourself? And getting the help for people, because if they could just have that conversation and talk about what's wrong, then that might save their life and that might take them off that ledge.
Yeah, I'm just every day wanting to see us do more to prevent gun violence and suicides and homicides. And I think we can do better. And I really appreciate what you're doing each and every day. And before we wrap up, is there a final thought that you'd like to share with our listeners that you think is important?
I would like to share that you can be a voice for change at your school. Your voice is your power. So if you see something that's not right, then you need to speak up and let your administration know, because we need to create safe environment for your students to go to school and learn. And I just want you to know that you can be an advocate, you can be a voice for change, and you have that courage and that strength. And if you're a stay-at-home mom or you're working parents, please be that voice and speak up for your children, because we have to, as adults, create an environment where they're safe and come home alive.
Well, those are such empowering words. And on behalf of your health, I want to thank you for being our guest today. I want to thank you for speaking up and speaking out. I want to thank you for really taking Alyssa's memory and making it part of how we think about improving the world, and really appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
We've been talking with Lori Alhadeff, the mother of Alyssa, who was a victim of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, about their story and how they're advocating for ways to make our schools safer. And we're going to put a link up and encourage all of your health listeners to join the conversation and join that movement. Thank you for being our guest today, Lori.
Well, thank you, Adam.
We're going to take a short break, but coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein. Stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the House Calls segment of our show today, we're going to spend a few additional minutes talking about your health questions and concerns. And if a listener has a question they'd like us to address on an upcoming show, they can send a comment to yourhealth@unc.edu. We'd like to ask our great executive producer, Laura Lacey, to read us our very first House Call question. Laura, what do we have?
I was diagnosed with severe obstructive sleep apnea by my doctor. In addition to getting the sleep machine, she recommended I get help losing weight and referred me to a nutritionist. I've lost 10 pounds so far, and I feel much better. I hope all doctors who think about recommending this kind of help find a way to encourage their patients to find a professional who can give them the support they need.
I want to say ding, 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 ding. You hit the jackpot. That's such good news to hear, and it really fits in line with the work we talked about in our research that matters about the number of people around the world who have sleep apnea and the real need to lose weight.
Yeah, and as I remember, we talked about the statistic. 37% of the people have obstructive sleep apnea. But as we can see here, it can be easily managed, and the progression can be prevented by controlling obesity.
And, you know, I think the key here is your provider not only said, let's get you on that sleep machine, the CPAP machine, but also said, let's work on the weight loss, and made a referral to someone who could really counsel you and work with you. Because I think that's the support people need. They need people who understand what it takes, who are patient and qualified and compassionate, because it's not easy.
Yes, and that's a doctor that I really want to have as my doctor. But the golden thing here is that the doctor chose to not only manage your disease, but also take appropriate steps to prevent any progression.
Yeah, I think that's a good golden rule of medicine, a golden rule for life. Laura, what's our very next house call?
What resources exist for a middle-aged man to get back on his feet when he's down on his luck? I've lost my job, my health insurance, my friends, and the money I had saved because of many bad choices. I know I need to start over, but I'm not sure how.
Wow. This is a really tough question, a difficult situation. And, you know, we can only begin to offer some thoughts here, but it's one that you're probably not alone. Unfortunately, there are probably a lot of people who've made choices in their lives or things happened to them, even not of their choices, that have led them to have some difficulties like this?
Yes, this is definitely a tough spot to be in. I'm a big proponent of if you are down at the bottom, the only way you can go is up. So if you live a life that way and if you see it that way, then all the steps that you take in the right direction will put you in a better position.
Right. The choices that you make now, and I think one of the choices would be to go see someone. There's so many different people you could see. You could see a social worker. You could see a vocational rehab specialist. You could see a primary care physician, a psychiatrist. Folks who are trained to listen and to offer some resources, because I don't think there's just one thing that's going to be the magic, you know, kind of pill here. It's going to be a variety of things. And as you said, Samir, making a start to say tomorrow I can perhaps be a little bit better than today.
Yes, exactly right. And as you mentioned, building connections, building relationships is probably the best start you can have right now.
I will say within healthcare, most healthcare institutions, larger ones, will offer resources for those who really don't have any resources. We call it sometimes charity care. And you can potentially get some free resources. There are free health clinics where you can sometimes get medications and other things. So finding access to what the services are offered, and that's where a social worker could really be helpful. I think we also want to make sure that you are feel that you're not alone, because feeling alone could make you feel desperate and feel suicidal. And so we would want to make sure you have access to kind of call helplines. We'll ask our health sciences librarians to put the number of the suicide prevention hotline for anyone that can call, because we don't want you to feel that there aren't options. There are. Thank you so much for that question. Laura, what's our very next house call?
I recently saw my doctor with complaints that he said were unusual. As a male who recently retired, I started sweating all the time, even drenching a shirt indoors while laying down. He seemed pretty concerned and started to run a bunch of tests. I asked him why he was so concerned, and he said he gets paid to worry. What do you think he was worried about?
Well, I think he was worried that you have something that could be serious. And sweating kind of starting on its own when you're older, in the absence of perhaps being a woman going through menopause, can be something serious.
Yes, and that's what a primary physician looks for. He just thinks that it is unusual for you to have these symptoms, and therefore he's just trying to find out what exactly is going on.
And let's just be, you know, right up front. The doctor wants to make sure you don't have cancer. Lymphoma sometimes can present with sweating. He or she will probably do a chest x-ray on you, maybe some blood work to see if the blood cells look okay. They may check some hormone levels, make sure you don't have a thyroid problem like hyperthyroidism that could cause you to be sweating. You know, the common sense things to check and to make certain. Make sure you're not on some medications, both prescription or non-prescription, whose side effect can be sweating, like there's some antidepressants that, boy, they do cause sweating.
Yes, and as Adam mentioned, these are symptoms we call as B symptoms, and they might mean something, but in most occasions, they might not mean anything. So we don't want you to get alarmed by it, but still a workup is necessary.
Let us worry about it.
Yes, absolutely.
That'll conclude our house calls today, and we want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today on Your Health. We hope we've addressed issues and concerns important to your health. If you have a question you would like us to address, you can send it to yourhealth@unc.edu. You can visit us online at yourhealthradio.org or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. We'd like to thank the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship. I want to thank our guest co-host today, Dr. Samir Arora, and our guest today, Lori Alhadeff. We hope you join us next time on Your Health. On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein, and we'll talk with you again next week. Take care.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 The Hill, presented by UNC Family Medicine. You can find this or any other episode of Your Health on demand at chapelboro.com. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 The Hill, your community radio station.